Hello and welcome to yet another episode of Ty Sharmanathrin, a Wheel of Time podcast. I'm Will.
I'm Sam.
And we are excited, so excited to be talking about the fourth episode of season one.
Just keeps getting better.
Doesn't it? Yeah.
Definitely.
Sam
does.
Texted me this past weekend and was like, I can't wait to record this
yes,
one.
Yes, like, I was driving back from South Georgia. Well, my wife was driving. I wasn't watching it and driving. I haven't tried to do that yet. I've seen people do that. Like, they'll like put Netflix or something on, like sitting up on their dashboard and like,
yeah,
I'm just watching Netflix
idea.
While I'm driving. No, don't. No, I'm too not bad of a driver to
not
pull that
a good
off.
Idea. Yeah. Yeah. Wouldn't want to have to explain that to a police officer. I've actually watched this episode twice. I want to watch it again because it's
a good
funny.
One.
Yeah. Similar to the previous episode, like, the third episode, I was like, okay, so far, this is my favorite episode.
Definitely like, the fourth.
The fourth one so far is my favorite episode. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Continuing with scenes that are not in the book.
Yes.
And I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what's kind of surprising about me saying that is that this episode.
So many scenes. Like, are there any scenes in the book?
There's.
I don't know.
The whole Perrin and Egwene Tinkers is.
Oh, sure.
Is fairly faithful to the books. Uh-huh. But yeah,
that's about it, though. Pretty much as they advertise, it's on point for the way you expect the characters to behave. But plot wise, none of the stuff happened on screen in the books.
Right. Exactly. You have the whole main thing, which is the Loghain stuff, is invented from things that more or less happen in the book.
Yeah, it just happened somewhere else.
Right.
And hear about it off screen.
And basically the same thing with what happens with Tom and the boys.
This yeah, it's just like a remix.
Exactly.
Of what happens in the books.
Felt very, very true to the books. Like, it was just like, you know, hey, let's just move
like,
some
let's
stuff around.
Let's just make this look a little bit differently. Happen a little bit differently.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Tom and the boys one first, because that,
sure,
that okay. I think is the smallest one, because you know they're riding through the woods, the boys still aren't sure if they can trust them.
Get to the Grinwell farm,
right? And yeah,
the farmer Grinwell pulls a bow on them and says, you know, what are you doing here? And they're like, oh, we're just passing through. He said, no, you're not. And indeed, no, they were not. They were going to sleep in his barn,
right?
That's the plan.
And then it works out pretty well for them, because once Rand just says, look, hey, yeah, you're right. We really just
wanted somewhere to sleep out of the rain.
He admits that to him. They're all like, yeah, okay, that's fine.
You can muck the stables.
Yeah. and then we get a great scene a few minutes later of Tom needing to save his strength.
Right. For his performance as a cleaner.
Right.
Tom says to Rand, this is what happened to my nephew, Owen. He went crazy. He started acting peculiar. Turns out he could channel. And I see all the signs in Matt. This is what's happening to Matt. We got to keep him away from the Aes Sedai.
It's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. This is doubling down on the idea. And this is not a spoiler. This is literally what the show is doing. It is trying really hard to make a case for each of the five.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're four, Tavirin and Nynaeve, I guess. I don't know if she's supposed to be Tavirin or not, to be the Dragon Reborn at this point. Like, something has happened for each one of them. You could make an argument for them each to be the Dragon Reborn. And so it's just such a difference from the book. And it's really not doing anything that's not true to the books. It's just sort of playing things up in a convenient way.
Right.
to make that point, which is, I mean, I'm fine with it. I'm gonna be interested to see what Rachel thinks, what my friends think that have not read the books, kind of at this point, maybe who they think the Dragon Reborn is. As we've sort of said, if the Dragon Reborn is not who it is in the books, then the show has fully veered into fan fiction territory.
Yes.
And I have no idea if I'm going to like, they should not do that.
They shouldn't.
Rafe, I think you even said that
Rafe has said that readers of the book know who it is. So we're not.
But it is fun for the many non-book readers of that are watching the show to sort of have this case be made for each of the five.
Yeah.
And so it is like, it is sort of a weird thing for us having intimate knowledge of the books and sort of wanting to discuss events as they're really happening. But also, I don't know, there's like a line you could toe there where you don't want to give away the farm. What's the word of the phrase or a phrase I'm thinking of here? I don't know. I'm struggling with this a little bit, and I'm wondering if I inadvertently stumbled over this line last episode. And if I did, listeners, I'm sorry. You know, it's just one of those, like, having to adjust to this dynamic of not knowing who the Dragon Reborn is, obviously, from the very beginning because of the MacGuffin of the perspective. So I don't know. I don't know if we how much we need to cling to that or try.
I think we give it a try. About. I think we give it a try. And, you know, I would just ask for grace when, you know, the thing, guys, that, you know, if you're just watching the show and this is the first time, which also means you're new to our show. First of all, welcome. Thanks for giving us a shot. We hope you haven't been spoiled too much up to this point. In our defense, in one of the arguable failings of Eye of the World is that it is incredibly obvious who the Dragon Reborn is entire book.
For sure. And so for sure. Very much a chosen one, like, you know, main perspective of the book. And it's like, and this book isn't trying to be that clever.
it's difficult for us to adjust because even as we were like reviewing that book, that we were even debating how much to try to keep it a secret, because when it is revealed, it's not a surprise by that time.
Right.
It's frustratingly obvious. And the fact that it is treated in the book at all like a surprise is kind of like, oh, come on. And so the fact that they're trying to adjust for that is actually really a good narrative.
Yeah, it's a good move. It is. Yeah.
But it creates confusion for us because it's like, it's so obvious in the book. And of course, you know, it will, as Sam said, it would completely change the trajectory. So there's a way in which it's making a lot of, I think, book fans a little nervous that it's not as obvious, which if I were the showrunner, I would be like, hey, that's a win.
Yeah, like, sure. If you hadn't said that about Rafe sort of confirming that they're going to go the route of who the Dragon Reborn is in the books, I would be actively worrying about that. Right. Because they're making at least some sort of case for it to be any one of them.
And I kind of enjoy that too. Like when you're talking about in this episode, you've got a case for it being Matt here with, like, okay, he might be a man who can channel.
Nynaeve, certainly. There's a strong case for Nynaeve at the end of this, which is an awesome scene.
Yes.
Not in the book at all. An awesome scene.
Awesome scene, yeah. I mean, up to this point, we've already had kind of small cases made for Egwene.
Rand.
And Rand.
The subtle one with Rand.
And not yet for Perrin, but, you know, it's like, there's something going on with Perrin that we haven't quite figured out yet, you know. It has to do with those wolves, and, you know, we'll see. There's, you know, so you get the feeling that there's something going on with him that maybe is form of a subtle, like, okay, there might be something going on with him. And so you're right, you go through all of these characters through this and they're doing a pretty good job of like setting maybe it's this person, maybe this person. And that, again, we're you know, when we're talking about the kind of changes, that's not a bad change. In fact, I don't know if I noticed any, I mean, there were like little details here and there maybe that I could get quibble, but this is the first episode that I walk through and there's like nothing that I'm like, I don't know about that.
I agree. I love the what you're saying about, you know, Matt and that scene with something evil coming out of his mouth. And then again, after they go to sleep and they sort of wake up and hear a scream, and like, and I love the sort of a little bit of ambiguity there like, did Matt kill all the Grinwells?
Yes.
Including, I guess Elsie Grinwell is not going to go to the White Tower. She was a kid and was murdered by either the Eyeless or Matt.
Yeah. I think it's fairly safe to say that it was the Fade.
Yeah. But especially from Rand and Tom's point of view at this point, they are not sure.
Well, like, you know, Matt comes in like that. Now the first time it clips and you see him standing there all still creepy and the bodies, I was like, for a half second, like, oh my goodness, they are playing this super dark.
Like, yeah, sure, sure.
Like, for a second, I thought they were making a pretty sizable kind of change to what was going on with Matt, I'll just say. And then when he looks up and he's pointing the dagger is clean when he is pointing it, which would be the cue that. And he's saying, I see you, to the fade. I think it's fairly safe to say, but you're right. It'll be interesting to see when we rejoin Rand and Matt, if Rand is like, so did you kill those people?
right.
Yeah, and let's move on to the Tuathuan and Perrin and Egwene.
I would say we get a little bit more of the colorful costumes for the Tuathuan in this one.
I thought the same thing. Like, these felt a little more like the Tinkers. Yeah. Which is interesting because both of these were even directed by the same director.
Right. It was just like the fact that there wasn't a whole lot of scenes with them, I guess.
I guess so. But you got the scene of Egwene dancing with the Tinkers talking with Aerym and Perrin looking on.
Perrin goes off and talks to
Isla. Isla. Kind of has a little bit of a bigger introduction into the Way of the Leaf.
I don't know how much that exact conversation is in the books, but it feels on point.
Yeah, felt very true to the books. I don't think that it quite goes like that. I think in the way that they're developing Perrin's character, you also see kind of the arc he's on at this point, too, with why.
Like, he probably doesn't want to be violent. It's just like he sort of is questioning, how can you live that way? Like, it's just the way the world is. You have to be violent.
And right. Exactly.
He says, no, you don't.
It's interesting because, here he's talking to the Tinkers and he's like kind of dumbfounded by them. But also I think you're seeing where he understands their perspective of things at the same time, or almost envies their view of things.
Let me switch over to Egwene talking to Aerym. And I think one interesting thing about that to me is that the Tuatha'an are kind of like the Amish and that they go out into the world when they're 20.
Right. The Rumspringa. Yeah. I thought that was funny. Some go off but most come back. And I understand is also the way it is with the Amish, that still the majority eventually return, which is intriguing. Aerym has this line about, not all leaves, or some leaves blow away from the tree or something like that. Mm-hmm. And you get this little feeling that, he's saying he's not sure he's going to stay a Tinker. We get introduced to Aerym very early in the books like this. I mean, it's at this point in the books. This is something fairly accurate. We don't get a ton of him at that point, though. It's just kind of like he's mentioned as a handsome, confident guy that, and I think in the book, Perrin says something to Egwene about, hey, aren't you kind of promised to Rand? Well, that dynamic is a little different because of the fact that they kind of had a breakup right before all this. Perrin wouldn't say that because, they're not really together now. It is kind of a different dynamic when she's talking to Aerym a little bit too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's get to the main plot.
Let's talk about the start of the episode with Loghain. Loghain is like kind of a demonic, intense Jesus. I don't know. Yeah. A
little bit. Oh man. I just, aside from the Emmonsfield Five, Loghain's he's in probably in my top, maybe he my is. Top three.
I love it. I really do.
It's like, excellent. Like, as if I'm talking about, like, from the books, I always felt like he was an interesting character that I would have liked to have seen more of. And we are getting that.
Yeah, for sure.
From the beginning, him showing up and being and really, truly believing clearly that he is the Dragon Reborn.
Yeah. Convicted.
It's so interesting. And then, I mean, seeing, as they call it in the show, Gaeldin.
I was gonna say, I feel like there's almost even been some inconsistent pronunciations, like Aerym says Tarvalon weird.
Tarvalon. Yeah, well, and fine. to be fair, I think you and I have talked about this once a long time ago. I think that is technically the author endorsed pronunciation, as frustrating as that is.
Robert Jordan is wrong. I could swear other characters in the show have said Tarvalin.
I don't know if it's been mentioned yet, because I think they've only said the White Tower at this point.
Oh, man. If they're going to be saying Tarvalon the whole show,
I think they are. I think you're going to have to get used to it. I think you're going to have to get used to it. And audiobook and paper book readers might have before argued about, is it Gildan or Giladon as...
No, I think I said Gildan or something in my head.
Yeah, Michael Kramer.
I'll probably still say that.
You know, Gildan. You said something closer to what they're saying. Mm-hmm. Because that apparently is what they're going with, mm-hmm. but Gildan or whatever. Mm-hmm. Anyway,
I love that their symbol looks like the 3-star Dragon Ball a little bit. it was on the king's dagger, and then it was on the pennant. And,
That's funny. You know what? Until you said that, I couldn't figure out why I thought that was funny looking.
Right.
Now you said it looks like a Dragon Ball. I'm like, yes, that was in the back of my mind. I was like, why is that funny to me? And no, that's exactly right. As I was watching this, I watched this with my parents over the Thanksgiving break. And as we kept seeing things, they were like, where was this shot? Where was this shot?
Yeah.
I was like, well, you know, we know
Czech.
most of it was in the Czech Republic. Some of it was in Croatia. Well, when we got to Gildan, whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
I started to say, well, I guess the Czech Republic, but then I remembered that there was rumor of just Alvaro Morte shooting at a location in Spain. And I think we even like guessed that this might have been what it was.
Sure.
That it was, you know, him invading. And so I was like, no, yeah, I think this was shot in Spain. And anyway.
Right on.
But yeah, that whole opening, his intensity when he walks up to him.
Yeah, when he turns the dagger back toward the king and then makes him drop it. It's like, join me. Like, Morgaine, maybe you should be the Dragon Reborn.
Like, I join him. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah,
you have the taint or corruption or whatever. Mm-hmm,
sure.
Showing up on his weaves and everything.
I was going to say, I think Moraine, it mentions something about men not being able to see women not being able to see men's weaves, and presumably vice versa. So that is something we had speculated about. It's good to get some verbal confirmation of it.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because that was actually something that, we did talk about in the last episode that I was curious about.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with seeing the taint corruption in his weaves, and presumably in any man's weaves who channels. That's okay to kind of as a visual reminder that
I think it's
they've got voices, and also that there is a personified voice for Loghain, and there's even a name. There was
I saw that too.
It started with an E or something like that.
Yeah. The female voice had a name in the captions. I noticed that as well. Yeah, I thought about looking it up in the Wikia to see if that was an existing piece. Oh, by the way,
Elucia Salid is what is the name? Okay, Elucia. So it's like it almost speculate that is indeed the person that Loghain was in a previous turning of the wheel. That would be my guess. Like, that would be my guess, that whoever the Dragon Reborn is, when they start hearing voices, it will be the dragon, and that will be our confirmation. That would be kind of my, so especially since we know that Lutheran has been cast. So
No, that's a good point. Yeah, we'll return to Loghain in a second. I want to just say I'm thinking of it. Uh-huh. So first of all, one small thing, and not Layla Ibarra, but a character named Layla from the Two Rivers was briefly mentioned in the book. Somebody found it when Perrin later thinks back and says, well, I could have stayed in the Two Rivers and married this one girl named Layla.
Oh, nice. Okay, I guess that's a little bit clever. I mean, you know, we still don't have to like it, but
But they at least
dipped into the into the books for the name. So, I was gonna say about like what's her name, Karuna or whatever.
Karini.
I wanted to like, is that a character at anywhere in the books or not?
Okay. Yes. Okay.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to jump around, but you just reminded me about
Yeah, I think she's a new spring in the
okay.
books.
Okay, that would explain why I didn't remember, since I have no idea how long it's been since I read New Spring, since we haven't gotten to it yet on our show, which we may or may not ever. I don't know.
Who knows?
We could do that to spice up the slog a little bit. We could just drop in a New Spring after this book.
Yeah.
I'd be okay with it, especially this right now in the middle of the show that's doing New Spring stuff. I think we should do that.
Yeah, definitely. We could do that. Yeah, after we finish Winter's Heart. Here's the other thing about Layla, that this is how many times I've watched these episodes now.
Sure.
Okay, so the scene where Layla is introduced, when Perrin comes in and puts his arms around her, they do a close up of his hands coming around her stomach.
Yep.
In a way that,
oh, like she's pregnant,
right? And so here's Yeah, I think you're supposed to. Here's my adding on to my theory of Layla as a dark friend. Mm-hmm. Here's my theory as to why she had become distant. It's because she realized she was pregnant and was struggling with the fact that she had an assignment to kill Perrin.
Except now he's baby daddy.
Right. And and that was why things were strained between them. And, you know, Perrin didn't know why. He just, you know, knows that she's become distant. And, you know, when he says, I love you, and she says, I know, right. You know, it's all, I'm just saying.
I was just rolling my eyes anytime I hear that line.
Anyway, back to Loghain. The thing that I would have liked to have seen is them capturing this guy.
Yeah, that's true. That of all things that happened off screen, I was like, but, we skipped right to him being shielded by only two Aes Sedai at a time.
Yeah. Is,
it definitely, so, you know, they pay lip service to the idea that he's strong.
Right.
But I don't get the idea that men in the show are going to be so much stronger than women.
Right.
Like, is the case in the books.
Right.
The fact that I think one of them says, Alana says, like trying to hold a cat in a bath is how hard it was to shield him. But, you know, and so that's like, they're just kind of proving that it's like hard to hold. But also in the books, I don't think that, you know, if you have a circle of however many women, it would be that hard to hold him. So I guess you could make an argument that if there were, you know, five or six of them holding the shield at any time,
right,
that they wouldn't have as much trouble. But in the books, they would never have tried to just hold a shield with two.
Right.
You
think about a later point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where there are six Aes Sedai shielding
a man. Yeah. So it's just something I've noticed that, like, I can't tell what that dynamic is quite going to be yet. But it would seem like maybe power levels are closer to comparable between men and women. We'll see.
Right. For the books, there's the Wheel of Time Companion that has numerical values that actually, you know, lay out. Right. Yeah, the official Wheel of Time Companion has a power scale that explains who is the most powerful channeler. And you can, like, go down the list kind of and see very clearly Dragon Reborn is up there, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you have certain Forsaken ranking in there. And then you have other major characters making it clear who the most powerful, you know, kind of the paper, rock, scissors, as it were, of it all. It's consistent with what's in the books. You know it if you, you know, to some degree, if you listen, and as people say, oh, this person's more powerful than this person, and this,
right, the Aes Sedai naturally defer to someone who's a woman, right, who's stronger than them.
And so I think in that sense that, you know, they'll probably be following that pecking order, but I could also see them not being as tied to men are automatically more powerful, and then women. But anyway, we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In the series of scenes, you know, you get Moraine healed, her.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say about the healing. It doesn't evoke the violent response that it does in the books. There's no, like, leg thrashing and, like, oh, you should go eat something right now because you're going to be really weak. Like, it's just in the same thing when Loghain heals the King of Gildan. Gildan.
In the books, there's a big thing about healing where a portion of the power, so to speak, that it takes to heal a person comes from that person. And so
it doesn't seem to be the case here.
That does seem to be a little different. Karine, I can't remember. She is, you know, a major player in this episode.
Anytime the show is creating, is pulling a character into a scene who is not it anywhere in this book, I just automatically assume they're going to die quickly.
Right.
And that was the case here.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah,
so like you said, this is a character that was in New Spring. I don't know. Did she die in New Spring?
I can't remember.
So probably not, but let's look that up. But I just assume if there's like, I don't recognize that character, they're probably going to die. Just like Layla. it's just an automatic assumption. Sorry.
Arguably, they're doing a good job of creating the stakes that maybe at times, arguably, the books didn't have early on because you didn't have many.
Yeah, there's not a lot of deaths.
You know, as many deaths early on anyway. You know, continuing on, as we talked about already, the kind of the whole shielding thing and the fact that
I thought that was, you know, talking about the channeling, I thought that was relatively more effective than channeling in the first episode.
Yeah,
I don't know. Actually, I mean, you know, the shield settling on him and like him pushing back on it. And
I liked it better, I'll say, than I did in the first episode.
Mm-hmm, same.
You know, and then we get more of it later, you know, when I mean, it's fun. You get to see lots of different Aes Sedai.
The shield and pretty epic battle. Yep.
Right. Alana stopping the arrows, as we saw in the trailer. But then,
yeah, that was good. That was effective. Yeah,
you know, her turning the arrows and shooting them back. The conversation, there are a lot of different things that happen here, again, none of which are in the books, but all feel fairly true to the books. The, you know, conversations that are had between Lan and Nynaeve, the conversation that Nynaeve has with Leandrin, all of those feel very true to the books. They help continue, like, you start to see Lan and Nynaeve interact, and there's not as much of that clear interaction in the book that explains
what happens
there, and so that I think is good.
So I guess we should talk about warders a little bit, huh?
Yeah. There's a lot of discussion about warders in this.
This is, I think this is where Collider, the Collider headline, I saw that the show was effortlessly queer.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, you have some, at first I was like, oh, gay warders. Okay, that works. Oh, bisexual warders. Okay, sure. Why not? You know, certainly makes sense.
It's
especially, it's an interesting kind of foil with the relationship between Lan and Moraine, you know, like
very
different.
Their relationship is very platonic, very and clearly so, versus Alana. It's accurate to the book in the sense of, you know, she is a green, and greens often, you know, they're
greens. You know, you kind of always hear the Aes Sedai sort of like sniff and like roll their eyes when they talk about greens a little bit,
because they always have multiple warders. But part of the thing that, you know, I always want to feel like is supposed to be clear is that, okay, the multiple warder thing is because they're the battle Aja. And so having, you know, and yeah, they have this reputation because of that.
Yeah, like at the end of the day, like those multiple warders are not going to go marry somebody else and then go off. You know, like that's always, it's always sort of an open question, like, oh, okay, so are they celibate?
Right. Yeah.
So Jordan doesn't really get into that, just kind of like skips the question generally. And the show is not going to do that.
Yeah. I think, you know, I'm not surprised by this. It's, it's not in the book, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Yeah. And so, it's the sort of thing that if the show didn't kind of address it head on, it'd be like, you know, they could have been just as subtle as they wanted to be, but it's fine.
You know, later when we get into a culture that this is more in that culture, it'll change the way it, or could change the way, arguably, or it should, that like the Two Rivers folks see that now because they've seen it before. Anyway,
I think it makes sense. I guess I don't mind it, especially just because it seems like it always was a deliberate oversight by Jordan and It makes sense. Like,
so
kind of like other speculation that will happen much later.
Sure.
You know, we've talked talked about it ad nauseum. It's like, yeah, I can see how they'll get there. And
right.
I will say I really like Steppen and I'm sad that their arc has ended early. Like, man, he's a cool character. I like that dude.
I agree with you. I like Steppen. I mean, in general, you get a good feeling for, you know, the warders are, they believe in what they're doing. They're not just errand boys, so to speak. They have to believe in the Aes Sedai as being the servants of all. Otherwise, they wouldn't do what they do. We have the scene of Lan praying, which was interesting. And Nynaeve quotes some from the old tongue, which, you know, we've already talked about the captions. So much of the old tongue being rattled off at one time, it's like, were apostrophes just really cool? and back in the age of legends or whenever it was,
right.
You know, just like,
just think about like older languages tend to be more complicated. You know, think of like ancient Hebrew, old English.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's true. It's just funny to me, like seeing it written out and like all the contracted kind of things. Which I know is accurate to the way the old tongue is written in the books, but I was just seeing it all like in a row there, like several words. Usually in the books, it's like one phrase or one word. Sure,
a name or something.
Yeah. It turns out that this thing she has memorized and she doesn't know what it means in the old tongue was the last words of the king of Menetherin, I guess Aemon, to his wife.
Aemon is a, I think that's a Lord of the Rings reference, but I just think of Game of Thrones now, Aemon Targaryen. Yeah. It's funny how they all borrowed liberally from each other and Lord of the Rings, primarily from Lord of the Rings. But
yeah, it's true. Well, and the fact that Aemon then evolved into Aemon, and that's where we get Aemon's Field, which is not mentioned in the show. They just call it the Two Rivers. I noticed.
That's interesting.
Which is not, I don't have a problem with that.
That's fine. It was always a little bit like confusing. Like, so are we still in the Two Rivers and Taren Ferry? And like,
exactly. Like understanding that the Two Rivers was really the name of
like the region,
right? That there were actually several, you know, Watch Hill, Taren Ferry. Mm-hmm. I think there was like one or two other towns in the area, and that Aemon's Field was kind of in the middle. This battle.
So I guess as leading up to that, Leandrin and the Aes Sedai are trying to stop Loghain, and Leandrin almost burns herself out. That was a cool way to establish that as a concept, where like her face is kind of glowing and she's about to burn herself out. I like how the show is establishing these magical concepts, the magic system, the hard magic system as it is, without just spelling it out in exposition.
They're doing a good job of trying to make it come up naturally so that it's not, because there's times in the books where it is exposition dumps.
It's done
in the form of teaching because characters need to know, but that wouldn't work as well in a TV show if you have a character just talking for 6 minutes about the way the magic system works. Would not be as fun. They're doing a good job of showing it. And then the whole business of Kareni getting killed and
Steppen kind of like goes berserk a little bit.
Right. Yeah. Runs in.
Destroys his axes.
Yeah.
Pulls one of them, at least. I don't know.
Yeah. Star-Lord, you know, and lets his emotions screw up what was going okay up to that point, and sticking his axes through the shield, which is an interesting thing. I don't know if we have a clear example of something like that in the books, but it kind of makes sense that, you know, if you put an object through the shield, then the weaves could then touch that object and therefore, in that case, like break them up and fling them out. I guess we kind of skipped over a little bit right before that.
Well,
the battle, then the battle's great. The battle's fun. You know,
it's kind of jerky, which is, I don't mind too much.
I mean, you know, clearly this is not an end of season kind of battle. It was just
a skirmish.
You know, here's
Alana throwing some dirt up using earth. Right. Cool.
Several different random Aes Sedai.
A lot of some random reds. Yep.
Yep. One of them gets killed and it's like, oh, what about her? Oh, never mind.
Yeah, she doesn't have order. When they're not in the x-ray. Like, well, that's not a good sign for you. Literally a red shirt.
Yep. Literally. I had that thought too. I was like, oh yes, we have red shirts in this episode. Red shirts.
Yeah.
So, but Moraine talking to Loghain.
Oh yeah. You know, she walks in and all the other Aes Sedai come in and
she's like, okay, before they all show up, tell me why
the Dragon Reborn.
Yeah. Tell me why I should believe you're the Dragon Reborn. He fails to convince
her. He's like, I have the lady talking to me. She's like, oh, that means you're crazy.
Yeah. And then, you know, and she says this, your power is a trickle in comparison to the raging sun or whatever she says of the power of the Dragon Reborn.
Right.
A few minutes later, after Steppen's axes are then used to kill pretty much everyone in the room.
Right.
And then
Nynaeve gets mad,
runs in, gets upset, and
channels suddenly, to heal Lan
and really heal everybody in the room, which is
she's pretty, only really focused on Lan, but yeah, heals right. everybody.
You know, everybody stands up, and Leandrin then takes this as an excuse to do what she's wanted to do this whole time. Just and
gentle Loghain. I want to say the other thing about Nynaeve's healing is it like her, she gets like the Super Saiyan hair a little bit. Yes,
like, I didn't notice that. Yeah.
Pretty great.
Then Leandrin stands
up. Yeah, like Loghain is like a raging sun. And so he's like distracted from defending himself, I guess. Or
I guess. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and then at that
Leandrin's
point,
like, I'm mad and we're going to do this.
Yeah. At that point, you have, you know, whatever, six Aes Sedai in the room or more and that are then able to
Captain
link.
Captain Planet thing. And yep.
Right. And now this is just a difference with the book. I don't think this is a spoiler. In the book, I'm pretty
full
sure
circle of 13, right?
It's a full circle of 13 to gentle man.
13 Aes Sedai here. I didn't count. There's like six or seven, maybe.
Right.
At one point, not talking about a full circle. There, no one is concerned about that. They're just like, as many people as you're here, work with me.
That's one difference. It'll be interesting to see. Because it's kind of important.
Yeah, it comes up a lot as a kind of story MacGuffin. Like, there are 13 Aes Sedai in the city. Well, I can't go there.
Right, exactly. And because it's kind of the magic number, so to speak, to potentially get a very powerful channeler under control. Uh-huh. So I don't know if they're going to say later, oh, it takes 8 or, you know, or whatever,
sure.
Which I wouldn't have a huge problem with.
Let's establish it as something, though.
You know, but yeah, I do feel like there needs to be a number because they do make a point to show like Alana running in and joining the circle. Mm-hmm. I also thought it was funny how they assume the position, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Like, okay, it's circle time.
Charge it up. We're going to like push the circle through my belly or whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
And then in the episode by zooming in on Nynaeve's eyes.
And it's kind of like, oh, dang, everybody's looking at her. She, you know, you get the feeling that she kind of knew that
she could channel. Yeah.
She could channel. And so that, you know, she's like maybe more, this look is a little bit like, oh, dang, the cat's out of the bag. And like,
yeah. Oh, yeah. And I guess this is, I meant to mention earlier that Loghain says like a raging sun, which is what, obviously, what you said earlier about Moraine says to him about the Dragon Reborn. So this is her moment where, oh, maybe Nynaeve is the Dragon Reborn.
And it's accurate. Nynaeve is a very powerful channeler.
Like, so, yeah, the fact that she heals everyone. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So that's
at this point.
That's awesome. Anyway. I was like psyched at the end of this episode.
Oh man,
like,
I was too. Yeah,
I'm hoping that they continue to get better and better. But you remember Brandon Sanderson made a comment like,
there's one that you'll really like.
Yeah, basically, there's one that's like a perfect 10 for, you know, lovers of the book or whatever.
Yeah, although it's hard to make an argument that there would be this one since so many scenes are not in the book.
Yeah, it's mostly fabricated.
We got another one coming.
I'm sure.
Someone on Reddit was like, I heard episode 6 is the best one, so maybe episode 6.
Well, here's hoping.
Random person on Reddit.
I hope episode 8 is the best one.
I know, right? Then you always assume the last one is, if it's anything like other shows, it's like the denouement.
Let's talk spoilers.
Spoiling the spoilery things. So if you're not interested in spoiling the spoilery things, tune back in next week where we will discuss the next episode.
One of the things that I mentioned, and this, I mean, isn't a huge spoiler in one sense because it's a theory, but is the idea that Stepan could be
Elias.
Elias.
My name is Stepan Elias, and I just never mentioned that to anybody until I remembered that I talked to wolves, and I had a spare axe in my pack, and here you can have it, Matt Perrin.
Right.
Sure, I would love to see more Stepan. Like I said, he's great.
Part of me is like, I don't know, I still want, you know, Elias to be Elias, but...
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I don't know, like you're saying,
Have that arc, I guess, if he, not quite obviously, because Elias's Aes Sedai is not dead. But what you could just have him like, all right, I'm leaving, you know, my Aes Sedai is dead. I'm going to go off in the woods, and maybe he's already can talk to wolves. So you could still have the arc of like the Aes Sedai want him back and doesn't want to see him. So without his Aes Sedai being alive, or they could do the like pass the bond to someone against their will thing, you know. So there's a couple of ways they could go with it that would still be pretty satisfying, I think.
Right.
I think the problem I would have with it at this point is that, one, there's been no mention of wolves around him, like just not even a hint. Yeah. And then two, the fact that he like doesn't seem to like smell things. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, like, there would have to be some kind of indication other than the Half Moon Blade.
It was just an interesting theory.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like you, though. If he shows up again later, I won't be upset.
Yeah, he's great. It's great. He kind of like, he reminds me of, I don't know, Gary Oldman, maybe something. Yeah. Like Gary Oldman is Lupin, maybe. I don't know. Maybe that mixed with Aragorn. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like
he's something in there.
He's just a fun fantasy character. That's all you can say. Like, you know, like, I want more of that guy. Comes to things like the shielding, the whole fact that it could still be like Rand needs six women to shield him.
Yeah, that's just because he's so much stronger than
how much more powerful he is.
I'd be okay with that.
And then in reality, the two women shielding Loghain didn't work.
True. And they even said it was like really hard, which, you know, you get the impression in the books when they have a shield and there's five or six holding it, like they're not worried. I mean, if they tie it off, you know, there's that moment in I don't know, when Rand is in the chest and he's like the hard points, when they're soft points, he can't do anything. But when they've tied off the shield and they're hard points, when they're out fighting the Aiel, that he can unravel it, and so maybe if it was just one or two, it would have been like they could kind of shield him, but he would be able to break it. That's probably fine, I guess. In that same vein of, it seems like there's more men who can channel at this point, or it's just more obvious. And then in the books at this point, there was just the idea that there'd been like, you know, a couple of false dragons over the last 100 years, and like that's it. Like there's not a lot of men who can channel. And it seems like a pretty clear distinction, which makes sense, because later in the books, there's obviously hundreds of men who can channel, you know, that join the Black Tower. So I don't have a problem with that, but it definitely seems like there's an established at this point that there are men roaming the countryside who can channel, and the Reds are just gentling them left and right.
It does seem like that, which, like you're saying, I feel like that would be fine. That makes sense.
That gets into Rafe, like, adapting the whole series,
either world. Not just the beginning. It'll make more sense for when suddenly there are hundreds of men who can channel. Uh-huh.
You're right. Surprise. There was a Reddit thread the other day where somebody said, what's your scene that you really want to adapt no matter what? And he said, you might as well. I was like, you better have a Black Tower at that point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. His AMA had a lot of little interesting bits in it.
I think he said Avienda had been cast, maybe.
Yeah, I think he did. So I think somebody asked him, and he said that, yes, she has been cast. But some people are like really concerned that there wouldn't be a clear Sidene and Sidar because it hadn't been said yet. And also because of the way that Leandrin talked about, you know.
Yeah, well, there hasn't been much TV yet, and there's a lot of concepts to convey. Right. And they're trying to do it in a subtle way that's not just somebody standing at a blackboard and like, here's how this system works.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, like somebody straight up asked him about that, and he like just said, when are we going to hear Sidene and Sidar mentioned? And I think he said, like, yeah, in season 2.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's it's good. Just not, it's not something
hasn't come up yet.
Yeah. That's been clearly mentioned because it hasn't been totally necessary up to this point.
Right. And at least Maureen did say that, you know, women can't see men's weaves. And so that would be at least already a nod in that direction.
To be fair, I think this was before that episode had dropped, but there were lots of like people asking about different little nitpicky things. And I would have been like, if I were Rafe, I would have been like, dude, just, you know, chill out.
Watch the show.
Yeah. Watch and find out.
He was great. He was great on there. He's very responsive and not.
Yeah. The nepotism of his boyfriend being one of the warders, white guy that, you know, sitting with the black fella. Mm-hmm.
All right. And
I just thought that was humorous by itself. Like straight people, directors, men, male directors do that all the time with their, you know, so it's not like it's absurd, but yeah, that was just kind of funny. He's also one of the handful of people that was another funny thing about this episode, or fun thing about this episode, was we've interacted with both Alana on Instagram and and one of her warders, I forget what the character's name was. It was one of the invented ones.
Oh, cool.
It was starting to be like, oh dang, like we've had a little back and forth with a few of these people.
Right, that's good.
On here, and they're really in the show. Mm-hmm. So anyway,
talk about what you mentioned about Matt and Mashadar coming out of his mouth. I love that. I think it's working really well. It's clearly different from the book in that Matt just got kind of like murdery and pouty in the book with the dagger, and now he actually has Mashadar in his mouth.
Right.
And yeah, I'm here for it. I don't know.
I think it is very accurate to the spirit of what happens to Matt. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
some fans of the book really don't like the way that Matt is able to Mordeth the end, because he explains that it's like being vaccinated, basically. The way it happens, the way Matt just explains it, is a little cheesy, I agree. But the concept of it, I'm for it. Like,
yeah, especially if you establish it like this, where he's had it inside of him, and like it's kind of like poisoned his spirit a little bit and scarred him, maybe.
Right. Yeah. I like that idea that Mashadar has basically lived inside him for several episodes, at least maybe in through the next season.
And I think I really like that so far, at least we haven't, I mean, he was already kind of had an attitude with Rand, which, you know, was like they're back and forth. And so there's a little bit of that, like him being just kind of a jerk, but it's more, I think you don't have to lean into that as much with him getting sick and sleepwalking with, you know, demonic coming out of his mouth. Like, you know, you already have established he's got this problem. You don't have to have him also be a jerk.
I mean, like you have him just be a little impatient here and there,
Which he already was. So it's like,
No, I agree. I think I like the way they're handling it so far. And I mean, I think Daniel Green said it, and there are some horror elements in the books, you know, the way that they're described. And so I like that's coming out a little bit in the show, with when he's standing there and it's all creepy, and then the Murdrol shows up and everything.
Murdrol's like up in the attic, like, in the hayloft, just like, ah!
All that part is so creepy. Mm-hmm. So
thank you all for joining us. If you would like to donate, there's a donate button on our website, tsmpodcast.com. We'd appreciate it. If not, happy you're here as usual. If you have anything nice to say, or you think we're crazy and would like to disagree with us, reach out on social media. You can find us at Podcast TSM on all the socials, Facebook, Instagram, etc. I don't know if etc. exists yet. Maybe we should.
No. Yeah. we should park that URL.
Yeah, for sure. Until next time, Tysharman Ether.